This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show with another 60 minutes of radio drama. We'll begin this week with Theater 5 and hear The Sibyl of Sycamore Lane, their story from February 11th, 1965. After that, it's Nightbeat and The Hunter Becomes the Hunted. That story aired September 11th, 1950.
The Greeks had a word for it, and the word was Sibyl, meaning a woman who could foretell the future. Well, I have a word for it, too, but I can't repeat it here.
Theater 5 presents The Sibyl of Sycamore Lane.
Way back at ancient Greece, there was a girl named Cassandra who always knew what was going to happen. She probably didn't know when she first realized she was a sibyl or a prophetess or whatever they call it. But I can tell you when I realized that I was. It was on a perfectly ordinary Thursday. At least it was ordinary up to about 4 o'clock. By that, I mean I'd spent the day the way any suburban housewife with two children would, being chauffeur, laundress, cook, gardener, what have you. But a little after 4, the bell rang. And somehow I knew who it was before I opened the door.
Hi, Kate.
Oh, hello, Ethel. I knew it was you. Come on in.
What do you mean you knew it was me? How?
I guess I must be psychic. I was going to phone you, but then I thought... She won't be home now. Phil's mother's there, so Ethel left the kids with her and went to the sale at Morland's. But she'll stop off here afterwards. And just at that minute...
There I was.
That's right. Is that where you were?
At Morland's?
Mm-hmm.
Kate, you've got to go over there. They've got some absolutely terrific buys.
Well, maybe I will tomorrow.
Why not now?
The kids. I don't want to take them there with me. It's probably a madhouse.
Oh, it is. But if you like, I can stay here with them. Where are they?
Out in the yard. Well, it's awfully nice of you, Ethel, and I'm tempted, but... Linda, Sammy, come in here.
What did you say, Mommy?
I said come in here at once.
All right, Mommy. Come on, Sammy.
Anything wrong, Kate?
What?
What in the name of... What's that?
What's what?
Well, that piece of metal out there.
It came from up there.
I'll say it did. Look what it did to the lawn.
Kate, what made you call the kids in like that?
I don't know, Ethel. I just... Why?
I thought you were kidding when you said you were psychic. But you must be. Well, just look where the darn thing landed. Right where the kids were playing. If you had called them in, they might have been killed.
You're right. I don't know what it is or where it came from, but I'm going to call the police... Killed? Oh, my darling. Oh, Linda, Sammy. With everything that happened after that, of course, I never got to the station to pick up Adam, and Ethel never went to get Phil. They took a cab, got to the house just as the police were leaving.
Kate, are you all right?
Why, yes, Adam.
Are you all right, Ethel?
Of course. Why?
Well, what do you mean, why? First of all, neither of you shows up at the station. And when we get here, the place is blue with cops. Did anything happen?
Who and how? It really would have been something for your wife.
What do you mean?
You see that hole out there in the yard? Well, the police just took a piece of metal out of it that looked like it weighed a ton.
What? Where did it come from?
A plane. A part of a wing or something. It was in trouble. Private plane made a forced landing on the golf course. But that's not all. Linda and Sammy were playing in that very spot right there a minute before the thing hit.
Kate, are they...
They're all right, too, Adam.
Thanks to her. You know what she did? Just before the darn thing came down, she ran to the back door and called him into the house.
Good heavens. What made you do that, Kate?
Well, I don't know, Adam.
Well, I know. Because she's psychic. That's why.
Psychic?
Mm-hmm. No reason for it, but something must have told her. She ran to the door and called them in.
And they really are all right?
Yes, dear. They're in the kitchen having some ice cream.
I need a drink.
Now that you mention it, I could use one myself.
Well, let me go in and take a look at them, and we'll all have one. In fact, several.
What do you mean, nonsense? Didn't you ever hear of anyone knowing about something before it happened?
Like who?
Like, well, like the fortune teller at the Gypsy Tea Room who told Gloria Bass Joe was going to leave her.
You didn't have to look at tea leaves or her hand to know that. You just had to look at Gloria.
Very funny.
You're being very quiet, Phil. Where do you stand on all this?
Oh, it's hard to say, Kate. Adam's right about the Basses, but, well, on the other hand, well, there are a lot of things we still don't know much about, like extrasensory perception, you know, all that.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Oh, okay. Come on, we better get going, Ethel. It's almost 7. But before we do, you wouldn't be psychic about anything else, would you, Kate? Like, maybe the stock market?
It's funny you should mention that. Is there a stock called Continental Chemical?
Yeah, I think so. Why?
I don't know. The name just came to me.
Mm, that's very interesting. All right, Ethel, let's go.
As I said, that was on Thursday. The next day, when word got around, there were several phone calls about what had happened, and quite a bit of talk. And the kids must have heard some of it, because when we were driving to the station to pick up Adam, Linda said,
Mommy, what does psychic mean?
Well, it means knowing about something. Well, knowing it's going to happen before it does happen.
Oh. Like what?
Like, well, knowing that that light is going to change, turn green before we get to it. Yes, of course. For once, the 5:18 was almost on time. Then, after Adam had kissed me and I'd slid over so we could get behind the wheel.
Everyone set? Seatbelts fastened?
Yes, Daddy.
I'd wait a minute if I were you, Adam, so you don't get too close to Mr. Gately.
Why?
Because I think he had a few too many in the bar car.
Oh, come on now, Kate. You...
Uh-oh. Look at what Mr. Gately did.
It wasn't a bad crash. He just sideswiped a parked car. But Adam looked at me rather strangely. He looked at me that same way during dinner. And afterwards, when the kids were in bed and he was going over some papers he'd brought home with him, he looked at me again somewhat differently and said...
I wish I knew what was going to happen at the Rio conference next week.
Do you, Adam?
Uh-huh. Particularly what they'd do about the tariff agreement. Because that's the key issue. And while I think there's a good chance it'll be signed... Have you got any ideas about it, Kate?
About what?
The tariff agreement at the Rio conference.
Oh, you know I don't know anything about economics, dear. I can barely balance the checkbook.
Well, I could explain it to you. It's for my quarterly report. Now, the Latin American section is the most important part of it. And what's going to happen down there depends entirely on whether or not...
I'm sorry, dear. But I'm afraid explaining wouldn't help. I either know things or I don't.
But it's not the...
You want me to take it?
No. Hello.
Hi, Adam, it's Phil.
Oh, hello, Phil. I saved the seat for you on the train tonight, but I didn't...
Yeah, I know. I took the 542. That's one of the reasons I'm calling. Did you see what happened to Continental Chemical today?
No. I mean, I know the market was up generally,
yeah,
but...
Sure, sure. But Continental was top of the list. It went up 8 points.
So?
Well, don't you remember what happened yesterday? I asked Kate if she ever got psychic about anything like the market, and she said she wasn't sure, but was there a stock called Continental Chemical? Well, I checked it this morning, thought it looked good, so I bought 200 shares.
200?
Yep, and I've already made $1,600 on it, thanks to Kate.
Nice going.
Oh, boy, you can say that again. Hey, now we've got a date tomorrow, the picnic, right?
I think so.
Well, tell Kate to forget about fixing anything for it. It's going to be on us. There'll be sandwiches for the kids, but the four of us are going to have caviar and champagne.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
No, sir, I don't want any argument about it. I'll see you tomorrow.
What was that all about?
Phil Bolton, to say that the picnic tomorrow is going to be on them, and that they're going to be caviar and champagne.
Oh, what's the occasion?
The fact that he took your tip on Continental Chemical, bought 200 shares, and it went up 8 points.
I see. Did he make much on it?
$1,600. Now, why didn't you say anything to me about it?
Because you didn't ask me.
Maybe not. But I did ask you about the Rio Conference.
And I told you I didn't know anything about that.
And didn't I say I'd explain?
That wouldn't have helped. You can't force these things, Adam. I either know something or I don't.
You're really starting to believe this psychic nonsense, aren't you?
Well, if you think it's nonsense, why did you want to know whether I had any ideas about that conference of yours?
I can't imagine. It must be Gresham's law. Irrational ideas driving out rational ones.
Well, we can't have that, can we? I'd better remove the source of infection.
Where are you going?
One shouldn't have to be psychic to figure that out.
Ah, just a minute.
Good night.
Good night!
Into bed feeling a little upset. A little, but not too upset. After all, we've been married for over 10 years and had disagreements before.
Like this one?
Well, maybe not exactly like this, but it's not serious. You'll see. He'll come upstairs, bumble around getting undressed, and he'll come over and say something, Kate or darling or something like that.
You think so? Okay. Let's see.
Well, about a half hour later, he'd come up. But he didn't come over. Didn't say anything. He just got into his own bed and went to sleep.
Well?
All right. I guess maybe it's worse than I thought.
Do you know why? What's wrong?
Of course. He's a darling. Attractive and intelligent. And while he's always helped out with the kids and around the house, He thinks that there are certain things that are the man's department and others that are the woman's.
And how do you feel about it?
I'm all for it. I want him to be the man, the head of the family, and make the decisions, especially as far as money is concerned.
Then why did you give Phil that hot tip about the stock? After all, Adam's an economist, and that was really moving over into his territory.
I know. I guess it was a mistake. But Phil asked me, and...
Well, what are you going to do about it? The whole situation?
I'm not sure. When you discover you have a special talent, a gift like this one, you can't just forget about it. It's too valuable and important.
More important than your marriage?
No. And, of course, he was particularly annoyed tonight, even before the stock business, because of that bit about the conference. But... Well, perhaps things will be better tomorrow.
You mean you don't know how things will be tomorrow?
No, I don't know everything.
Really?
Good night. Well, things didn't turn out the way I'd hoped. I woke up feeling gay and cheerful. It was Saturday, which was always fun, and it was going to be more fun than usual today because we were going on that picnic with the Boltons. Adam was already up. He gives the children breakfast over the weekend. And the minute I walked into the kitchen, I got the message.
Good morning, Mommy.
Good morning, darling, Sammy. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning.
Is anything the matter?
Well, you probably wouldn't consider it important, and perhaps it isn't. But the kids both wanted bacon for breakfast, and there wasn't a strip in the house.
Oh, I'm sorry, but they almost never want it. How was I to know that they would today?
I beg your pardon?
I said... All right. Forget it.
You two having a fight?
No, dear. Of course not.
Are you sure?
Of course.
Well, Daddy doesn't look so sure.
He sure doesn't.
Eat your cereal.
So everything was going to be all right today. You're some psychic, Toots. You better do something and do it fast.
But I told you I don't want cereal this morning.
I was sorry. Now you can have some for breakfast tomorrow.
All right, Mom. What time are we going on the picnic?
We're not.
We're not? Why?
Well, if you look outside, you'll see. It's going to rain.
But we were supposed to go on a picnic. It was all arranged. Mommy, is it going to rain?
Okay, Kate. Here's your chance.
I don't think so.
What'd you say?
I said, I don't think it's going to rain. In fact, I'm quite sure it's not.
Then we can go, can't we? I mean, if Mommy says it's not going to rain, it's not
just a second. Have you taken a look outside, Kate?
Yes, it's quite gray, but that doesn't mean anything.
Well, then may I inform you that I listened to the news and weather at 8 o'clock, and the forecast was for thunderstorms.
That doesn't mean anything either. Aren't the forecasts ever wrong?
Me? But of course, you never are.
I didn't say that. I just said it wasn't going to rain today, and I...
Hello.
Hi, Adam. I thought I'd better check in with you so we could decide what to do about the picnic. I mean, it's obvious it's off for today.
No, not necessarily. Huh? Kate says it's not going to rain.
It's not?
That's what she says.
Is she sure?
Apparently.
Oh. Well, if she says so, I'll tell you what. Why don't we wait till this afternoon, say 2 o'clock, and if it hasn't rained by then, maybe we'll go after all.
Fine.
Are we going?
We'll wait till 2 o'clock and see what the weather's like then.
2 o'clock? What are we going to do till 2 o'clock?
Ask your mother.
It still hadn't rained by 2 o'clock, so we went. We and our car, the Boltons and their kids and theirs. No one else was at the picnic grounds, which wasn't surprising since the sky looked the way it must have just before Noah said, "All aboard." When I got out of the car, Phil said...
Look, Kate, I've got all the faith in the world in you, but...
But what?
Are you sure? I mean,
I'm absolutely sure. I tell you, it's not going to rain.
Okay, let's get the stuff out.
Do you want to hand me the blankets, Adam?
Here you are.
Let's go down that way toward the river.
Don't you think we should stay closer to the cars?
Why? I said it wasn't going to rain, didn't I?
Yes. All right, everybody, let's go.
There's a good place. Over there, next to the...
Oh!
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 Mommy!
Okay, back to the car, everybody. Run!
They ran, and I stood there trying to look disconcerted and miserable. I was soaked, of course, but I didn't mind. The timing had been perfect. Then suddenly, there was Adam.
Here, get under this.
Oh, thanks, Adam. Where did you get the umbrella?
Where do you think? I may not be psychic, but I'm not a complete idiot.
No, you certainly are. I'm sorry, Adam.
Oh, that's all right. We're none of us perfect. Can I ask you something?
Of course.
Have you talked to Mr. Whitman lately?
Whitman?
The little man with a cigar and a hamburger usually takes the 807.
Oh, no. I stood near him the other day when he was talking to that friend of his, but... Why?
Because he's vice president of Continental Chemical. Must have known they were going to merge with Acme. And that's how you were so psychic about the stock.
Oh, you're probably right.
I'm sure I am. Now, let's get back to the car.
We had the picnic in the Boltons' rumpus room, and it was fun. Everything was fun from then on. Adam was very concerned about me, afraid I'd catch cold, and... Well, it took me quite a while to fall asleep that night. And as I lay there...
Feeling pretty good, aren't you?
Yes. It all worked out very nicely.
Then you're not sorry about it.
About what?
Giving up that precious gift of yours.
What do you mean, giving it up? Listen.
To Adam's snoring? Why?
because in just a minute he's going to turn over and stop snoring. See? I've still got it. If I ever... it'll be there.
Presented The Sibyl of Sycamore Lane, written by Robert Newman, produced and directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, Fran Carlin, Stan Watt, Evelyn Juster, and Casey Allen. Audio engineers, Neil Pultz and Marty Folia. Sound technician, Ed Blaney. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many different ways. This one began with a stay of execution and ended with a doomed man finding salvation and the hunter becoming the hunted.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
There's an old bromide about nothing being deader than yesterday's news. But what about the people who made that news? The couple who were divorced, they've still got their tangled lives to live. The hit-and-run driver, he's still got his conscience to keep step with him wherever he walks. And the murderer on his way to the death house, his story is still with him. Even though yesterday's newsprint lines the inside of today's garbage cans and provides wrapping in the fish markets. There's another old bromide the best of us have a hard time learning. It has to do with taking things for granted. And I was the wide-eyed innocent in kindergarten, my education beginning a little past midnight as I stepped out into the deserted sidewalk in front of the newspaper building.
All right, Stone.
Huh?
Don't turn around. Don't move.
Well, if this is a stick-up, you're out of luck. Payday's tomorrow.
It's John Galt, Mr. Stone.
Galt?
I said don't turn around. I escaped, Stone. I got away. Let's find your car.
How did you escape?
On the train, on the way to the death house. The guard got careless.
That his gun?
Yes.
You kill him?
No.
There's probably an alarm out for you.
Maybe they won't catch me before I do what I have to do.
Now, what's that?
I kept saying I was innocent, Mr. Stone. You kept saying I was guilty. The newspaper's a powerful thing. What I said, only a few people heard. What you said in your column, a million people heard. Come on, let's go.
I work for a newspaper, Galt. We deal in facts. Facts like a jealous husband shooting an unarmed man in the back.
Facts. When it's printed, people believe it. Even if it's a bunch of trumped-up lies.
I didn't convict you, Galt. The evidence did.
You helped. Here we are. Get in. You can drive. And no tricks. I've got nothing to lose. Nothing.
Where are we going?
To the assistant district attorney's home.
He lives on Fowler between Oak and Euclid.
What do you want with him, Galdi? He's just a guy doing his job, and it's a tough one.
He's figuring on getting married soon, planning on a nice, comfortable life.
What's wrong with that?
Why don't you ask my wife? Come on, get ready.
The assistant district attorney, Philip Holmes, he conducted a brilliant prosecution of Galdi, developed an airtight case. And now Holmes was preparing to taste the fruits of victory. His fiancée, the girl he wanted to marry for a year, had finally set the date. The wedding was scheduled for next Sunday. And now this. I looked over at Galt. His fingers clutched the gun like a child clutches her favorite doll. I'd have to wait, sweat it out for a while, find out what he was after, and pray for an opening. Maybe he isn't home, Galt. Maybe he's still out with his fiancée.
Shut up.
Yes?
Inside.
What do you think?
Get back in. You too, Stone.
Cool. Well, now, look here.
Ready for bed, Mr. District Attorney?
Yes. I heard from the police about your escape. They're looking for you, Galt.
Get dressed.
What do you expect to accomplish? You can't.
You better do as he says, Holmes.
What is this, Randy? What are you doing here?
I'm just along for the ride. This is his show.
All right, answer it. Be careful what you say, Mr. D.A.
Hello?
Philip, I just heard it on the radio. John Galt escaped.
Yes.
Oh, they called you.
Yes.
Don, do be careful. He might come for you. He swore he'd get eaten.
Oh, there's nothing to worry about, dear.
Phil, he's crazy.
Say goodbye.
What's that, Phil?
Louise, he wouldn't come here, Louise. This would be the last place he'd come to.
But you should have protection, Phil. Darling, if
hello,
you call
good night.
Yes, it's all right. Good night, dear.
Phil.
Good night.
Now get dressed.
What do you want?
I just told you. I want you to get dressed and hurry. Hurry, like you hurried me through my trial.
Get away from that drawer. I want you to get dressed. I just want a pair.
I told you to get up.
Don't raise my hand, you...
Now his back was too much concerned with Holmes, and for a moment he'd forgotten me. I had three fast steps to take, and then I grabbed his arm. Drop it. Drop that gun. Holmes, get the gun.
No.
No, you don't.
I got it. I ought to shoot now. I ought to shoot both of you now.
Get back, Stone.
You can't blame me for trying, Gold. You're not acting very much like an innocent man.
Yeah, what do you expect me to do? Go quietly to the death cell and wait for a miracle? Keep on waiting for it while they shave my head and slit my trousers?
You should have thought of that before you got involved with a character like Cutler.
You were given a fair trial, though. Fair trial. It was a time I had a lot of respect for law and courts and justice, but not now. From here on in, I haven't got anything to lose. But you have, Holmes, and so have you, Stone. Try it again. Try another trick. You'll miss again, I'll kill you.
You'll kill us anyway, Galt, won't you?
I know I can't escape. I know I'll be caught. But when they finally catch up to me, 1 second before they kill me, I'm going to kill you.
And in the meantime?
I'm going to show you things that never got into the court. Things that'll prove that I didn't kill Monty Cutler. Then your dying will be bitter and pointless like mine is. We'll see how you like it. Ready, Mr. D.A.? We'll use your car. The police respect it.
Is this where you used to live, Galt?
That's right. Where I used to live.
What's here?
My wife. Wait.
You sure this is how you want it, Galt?
Just don't try anything foolish.
It's your play.
John.
Oh. Ev, you know Randy Stone, Evelyn. The one who wrote those stories about me, about us.
You're still mixed up, Galt. I'm a reporter. I don't take sides.
What is it, John? What happened?
And the district attorney, Ev.
John, what's wrong?
Get in. Get in, both of you.
An awfully determined host, Gold.
Over there where I can watch.
Why are you doing this, Gold? You can't do yourself any good, and you're only making things worse for your wife.
Motive. You kept saying motive, Mr. D.A. Your whole case against me was built on what you said was my motive for killing Cutler.
I heard everything you had to say in court.
But this isn't court now. There's no judge, no jury, just us. Ev, we've been in love for a long time, haven't we?
Yes, John.
Ev, you worked for Monty Cutler for years. Was there ever anything between you and him?
No, no.
I was never jealous of him. I had no reason.
No.
Was there any reason I'd want to kill him?
No, no, John.
I heard all this before.
No matter what my wife says, Mr. D.A., I'm going to die tonight. I'm going to run, and they're going to catch me. This is the last time I'll see my wife. But you'll never live to have a wife. You're going to be running with me. You're going to know how it feels to be hunted. How it is to know that this is your last night to live.
John.
Ev, the night I called for you at Cutler's place, the night he was shot, you'd already gone home. You said you saw a woman there earlier.
Yes, Mr. Cutler's wife.
He hadn't been living with her.
Not for years.
And just a second. The police tried to find this wife. They never found any evidence he'd been married.
No, he never was. Never found any supporting evidence that a woman was there the night of the murder.
I asked for time. Why'd you rush the trial right through, Holmes? Maybe I could have found her.
John.
Yes. Yes, I've got to go.
John, what's going to happen?
Come on, you two. Goodbye, Ed.
Where now?
Maybe some more evidence that never got into court. Keep your eye on the road, Stone. I'll tell you where to go.
I never heard a convicted killer say he wasn't framed or up on a bum rap or he never did it. I've heard it hundreds of times, and no matter how good they make it sound, they've always got an angle. And I'd find out what Galt's was before long, too. I kept driving downtown to the west side into the manufacturing district.
Turn right at the cornerstone.
Monty Cutler's place?
No, across the street from Cutler's, the warehouse.
And what's there?
A missing witness. Maybe he's back in town now.
Who is it?
The night watchman. Come on. Out. He was there when I came to pick Evelyn up that night. I said hello to him. But nobody could find him during the trial.
Seems like a silly waste of time to me.
Time is all you have left, Holmes. You better keep hoping I manage to waste a lot of it before they close in on us.
What do you want there? Hold on there. What is it you want?
Yeah. It's me, Charlie. Johnny Gould. And this is Randy Stone of the Star. And maybe you know our assistant district attorney, Mr. Holmes.
What do you want?
The answer to some questions, Charlie.
What about? What for?
About Monty Cutler's murder. And because you skipped town during my trial.
I don't know what you're talking about.
If you know anything, Charlie, tell us about it.
What could I know?
Why'd you leave town, Charlie?
I went on my vacation.
More than 4 weeks?
Yeah, sure.
Who paid for your vacation?
Nobody. What do you mean?
Tell him what he wants to know, Charlie.
Mr. District Attorney,
Go ahead, Charlie.
You want me to tell everything that happened that night, Mr. Holmes?
Why not? What difference does it make?
What difference? Well, maybe so. I said hello to you, Mr. Gould. You remember that?
Sure.
And before that...
What?
Well, before that, this woman come around.
Which woman, Charlie?
I've been a watchman here a long time. I see her a few times. Maybe... 5 or 6 years ago. She used to come around that
Cutler's
time.
Wife.
I don't know whether she was or not.
How long before I got there, Charlie?
Maybe half hour, I guess.
How long did she stay there?
I don't know. Mr. District Attorney, you sure you want me to spill this?
Why, yes, Charlie. No mystery, is there?
There was a car there, too.
What car?
big limousine.
Go on, Charlie. Which big limousine?
The district attorney's car.
My car?
The DA's car. Are you raiding Cutler's roulette wheel, Holmes?
No. That's it. That explains everything. You were there. That's why you refused me a delay to uncover the truth.
Now, don't jump to conclusions.
How does it feel, Holmes? Why not jump to conclusions? You've been doing it a long time. It all falls into place, the whole pattern. You're rushing me through the trial, not giving me a chance. Piling up circumstantial evidence.
Could it have been your car, Holmes?
No. That's a lot of people have access to it.
That'll be worth finding out about, Holmes.
Yes. Yes, I'll look into it.
Oh, yeah, I can just believe that. I can just see you putting your neck in a noose for me.
Grog, you said it before. A newspaper's a pretty powerful thing. With this evidence, we
You
can...
expect me to trust you after all those stories about how guilty I was?
Well, this would make a better story.
Sure, sure. The story of Randy Stone bringing in an escaped murderer would be swell for you.
Look, you've established enough doubt so that we can...
You'd say anything to save your skin. You'd promise anything. We'll save it for your readers. They believe what you say.
The streets are honeycombed with police. How far do you expect to get?
At least one more place before they catch up.
Where go?
A woman, Mr. District Attorney. Cutler's wife, the one you said doesn't exist. But does it matter? Wherever we go, you better keep hoping nobody stops us. Us. Because as soon as they do, it'll be the end of the line for all of us.
Well, Randy, you're a fast guy with an answer, so answer this one. Or are you looking for an angle? You've heard 100 convicted killers say they're innocent. You're tired of listening. You know they're lying. But here's the 101st, Randy. Maybe he hasn't got any angle. Maybe he's telling the truth. And if he is, it makes sense for him to feel that there's no answer. And he's got to keep running with the cops and everybody waiting for him with guns and with cars. Because he can shout his lungs out and nobody will listen. He can yell and cry and scream that he's not guilty. And they'll still drag him down the long corridor and make him step over the next to last threshold. What would you do if you were him, Randy? The DA's car, how does that figure? Gault wasn't taking any chances now. He forced Holmes and me to burrow into the well below the dashboard. He got behind the wheel, driving with one hand, his other hand gripping his gun. The DA's car was flush, but it wasn't designed to make a passenger comfortable, doubled up. If I was subject to claustrophobia, there was never a better time for it to come out.
Hang on, there's a barricade ahead. We're going through it.
I'll be a fool, though.
About the only thing I could see was the gas accelerator and Gault's foot, and suddenly the foot went way down, jamming the pedal against the floor.
Here it comes. This is how it feels.
I remember something about letting your body relax when you're heading for a smash-up, but how can you relax with your knee propped against your chin? I clamped my jaw tight and said a fast prayer.
Like this, Stone, like this!
NBC is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. This Wednesday marks the return to the air of Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman in their popular roles as the Halls of Ivy. The delightful adventures of Professor Hall and his wife Vicki mean 30 minutes of top listening for the entire family. And on Wednesday, October 4th, that remarkable mustache that walks like a man, Groucho Marx, will be on NBC with his hilarious quiz game, You Bet Your Life. It's 30 minutes of fun and prizes, the biggest prize of all being Groucho, of course. Now back to Night Beat and Randy Stone.
It wasn't particularly comfortable under the dashboard of the car, but it was a good place to be with bullets on the loose and an escaped murderer at the wheel. The car skidded and danced through the barricade and then gave a surge and swept on.
How does it feel, you guys? How's it feel to be the boss for a change?
Let us get out of here and I'll tell you. What's that?
I don't know. Gas. They hit the gas tank. I'm out of gas. All right, get out.
Now, wait. Hold on a minute. There's no sense in this, Gault.
Get moving. I'm out of gas. I'm not out of bullets.
Before you do something that can't be undone, Gault, think a minute. There'll be a real investigation. We'll go...
We gotta make... We gotta make those woods.
Holmes, what about it? If he's innocent,
I'll give you my word.
Come on. Faster. I'll be here in a minute. Faster.
Oh, listen. I thought I was being fair. The trial. I believe there wasn't any valid reason for a postponement. I've always conducted myself according to strict letter of the law. Now if I made a mistake.
Save it, Holmes.
All right. Hold it. You get behind that tree, Holmes. Stone, behind that bush. It's not too dark for me to see you. One move and I shoot.
We know you're there. Come out with your hands up.
The two cops in the patrol car were sitting ducks with the moon behind them. They were coming slowly, their guns drawn. If Gog wanted to shoot, he couldn't have a better target.
Stay back. Stay back.
But they kept coming, not seeing any of us, straight for the bush behind which I stood.
Mr. Holmes, are you there?
Yes. Yes, don't shoot. Don't come any closer. I'm warning you.
They're coming in.
I said, stay back. I'll shoot.
Come on.
Gog fired from less than 15 feet, but if the shot hit one of them, it didn't stop him. They both came on. I counted one, two, and then the cop in front was close enough. I braced myself and I let him have it. Sometimes you have to do the darndest things to help a guy. My haymaker hurt the cop, but not as much as Gog's bullet would have. The other cop was on me now. I twisted. I rolled away. He sent a whistling blow past my ear. He was a heavy guy. Real heavy as he landed on my kidney. And I tried to squirm away. And then suddenly, the cop's weight slid off my back. I turned and Galt's face twisted in maniacal looked down at me. His gun raised.
Get up, Stone. You two, Holmes. They're out cold. Cops will be swarming all over here in a few minutes.
Wherever we go, they'll...
Now you know how it is. To be the hunted instead of the hunter.
How long do you think we'll last in these woods?
The freight yards are close by. I said, come on, both of you. Run! Come on, run!
You can read about it. You can see it in the movie. But you never really know how it feels to be the quarry in an honest-to-death game of fox and hounds until you've had it. We were running, but there'd have to be a dead end, and soon. And that'd be the time that Galt, half crazy with bitterness and hate, would turn his gun on us to make sure that he took us with him. We made it to the freight yards, and Galt steered us to one of a long line of boxcars.
Okay, here's an empty freight. Get in. In that corner. Sit down.
Now, for a little while, I thought maybe you were innocent, Galt.
Ask Holmes whether I am or not. Ask him what his car was doing to Monte Cutler's. Maybe he lost too much at the roulette wheel in the upstairs room.
You didn't like it when they used that kind of thinking in court.
When the cops came after us, what did Holmes do? He just stood there waiting.
What did you expect me to do?
Maybe what Stone did. He didn't just stand there hoping the cops would kill me like you were hoping. That would have fixed it up fine for you, wouldn't it, Holmes?
You're all crossed up, Galt. I helped knock them out because I didn't want them killed.
They're coming, Galt. Galt, while you still have time. If you give yourself up, I'll make every effort to get at the truth.
I know the truth. You killed Cutler.
You talked about motive, Galt. What's my motive? Why would I kill him?
There's something beyond that, too. Man neither has it in him to kill or he hasn't, Galt. And you shot at the cops back there, it proved something.
I didn't shoot at them. How could I have missed them so close? I shot in the air to scare them off.
You're going
to
scare them off now? They're pretty close. They'll be here next.
All right, you tell me. It's up to both of you. When that door opens, I'm going to shoot. We'll find out who's the murderer. All right, Holmes. Tell me what to do. Shall I shoot them or you? Them or you?
Listen, they're still away. You can hide. I'll tell them you ran away. They'll believe me.
Yeah, you must think I'm an idiot. Well, Stone, you said a man is either a murderer or he isn't. How about you? Are you a murderer? They're hunting you now, too. They'll be here in a second. If I shoot them, we can still have a little time. How about it, Stone?
You'll do what's in you to do, Galt. Let's
try this. Quick. Holmes, quick. What'll it be?
Oh, you crazy fool. I didn't kill Cutler. I swear to you I didn't.
All right. All right, come on out of there.
The cop's flashlight played around. Gold got to his feet. I could see his gun raised, but he was standing stock still, frozen. I jumped to my feet, but not as quickly as Holmes.
Don't shoot! It's me, the district attorney. Gold, for heaven's sake!
And then he stopped. Gold still stood there. The cops moved in, their flashlight beam steady on Gold's tortured face. And then the tenseness went out of his features. He turned to the district attorney, dropping his gun on.
I can't shoot.
Maybe you did prove something, Galt, right now.
What was your motive, Holmes? Doesn't matter now, does it? You gotta have a motive to kill somebody. It has to be a pretty good motive, too. Because even with what I have against you, I still can't kill you.
Everything all right, Mr. Holmes?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, Galt. Come along.
He didn't kill Monty Cutler.
No.
You didn't either.
No.
It was your car.
I don't know. I suppose maybe it was.
Burl wanted to take us to one more place, Holmes.
Cutler's wife.
Yeah, we'll have to find out where she lives.
Yes, sir. I'd like to stop off at Louise's first, Randy. She's probably worried about me. It's close by.
Sure. We drove back away with the patrol car, and then Holmes and I caught a cab. It was only a 10-minute drive to his fiancée's place. The DA was quiet. I didn't feel like talking either. We were awful close to eternal silence back there in the freight car. Maybe that was in Holmes's mind, too. Or maybe he was thinking about the woman he was going to marry. A uniformed elevator operator took us up to the fourth floor. The swank apartment house was good for my jumping nerves after the rough night. Deep carpets and subdued lights everywhere, I began to feel myself unwinding.
Darling. Oh, darling, thank heaven you're all right.
Louise, this is Randy Stone.
Oh, please come in.
Thank you. Thank you. 3 a.m. is a pretty weird hour to come calling.
I couldn't sleep anyhow. I've been glued to the radio. That would be terrible for you. For both of you.
Louise.
Would you like some hot coffee?
Louise. There was a moment when...
Darling, you mustn't think about it anymore. I know it was hard. Mr. Stone, wouldn't you like some coffee?
Well, no, thank you.
Promise to kill us, Louise. There was that moment when he could have. What stopped him, Randy?
I think it was because he wasn't sure you killed Cutler.
Yes. Yes, he couldn't figure a motive for me. Isn't that a peculiar little thing, Louise?
Let's not think about it.
If he'd known I did have a motive, if he'd known the woman I wanted to marry was Monty Cutler's wife, he wouldn't have hesitated. The rest of the evidence was all there.
Yeah.
He could have killed us. And he didn't. He's an honest man. Far more honest than I was. Because all along I kept pushing the thought out of my mind. I didn't want to let myself think that John Galt might not be guilty.
Well, it's all over now. It's finished.
Louise. Why didn't you tell me you were Cutler's wife? Because Cutler was a gambler and a racketeer.
Phil, Mr. Stone is here.
Maybe I ought to let you handle this alone.
No. All right, I want you to hear this. You see, it's understandable that we couldn't find Cutler's wife. Louise was out of town, weren't you, Louise?
Phil.
I had loaned the car to you, Louise. You were using the car that night.
I didn't know that Galt would be there. I didn't want to implicate anybody.
Makes me an accomplice, doesn't it?
No. I did it for us. You've got no pardon, and I did it. Because I love you, Phil.
Randy?
Stay home.
You come with us. Down to headquarters.
Yeah. I've got an apology to make down there, too. That old bromide that I was talking about, it's don't jump to conclusions. It's an easy habit to get into. At work, at home, with the people we know and love. I got my education all over again with Johnny Galt, and I didn't learn with books. Playing for keeps is a tough way to learn, but maybe it lasts longer that way. I hope so. Copy boy. Where is that copy boy? Probably sneaking a beer at the corner. There I go, jumping to conclusions again. Copy, boy.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's story was written by Celie Glester and Merwin Gerard, with music by Frank Wirth. The part of Galt was played by Jeff Corey. Others in tonight's cast were Gene Bates, Francis Cheney, Eddie Fields, Hal Gerard, and John Stevenson. Frank Lovejoy will next be seen in Milton Sperling's production, Three Secrets, released by Warner Brothers. Listen next week at this time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood.
There's more from Theater 5, Night Beat, the Relic Radio Show, and lots of other old-time radio at relicradio.com. All the podcasts are listed there, past episodes, thousands of them, and a shoutcast stream with even more old-time radio. Lots to listen to there, made possible by your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll be back tomorrow with Case Closed, and next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.